all you guys in the Teen Canteen are simply the best. We have surpassed 10,000 views on YouTube before our 100th episode. Thank you, thank you, thank you just so darn much. Our offering today takes place over two shows, one from July 23rd, 1995, and then July 27th, 1996, titled Butter Than Nothing. You'll understand why shortly. The first quarter has various talk with some choppy edits. We take calls from Norma, who has a funny epitaph and then a poem to her boyfriend. Judy in Pennsylvania with some chat about restaurants. Norm wants to open Picasso's, and the hiring qualifications are very, very interesting. Our dear friend Joan in Tewksbury talking about stamps, the talking information centers for the blind, and being buried in newspapers. Now we move to July 27, 1996, for the entire second part of the episode. Our guest was Norma Duffy Lyon, the Butter Lady. She sculptures in butter. Stuff like full-size Clydesdale horses, a Brahmin bull, Garth Brooks, and oh, so much more. She was currently churning out American Gothic for the Iowa State Fair. This is one fascinating woman. Not only her talents, but her family as well. Just a super interesting lady, and a great interview by Norm. And before we end, Norm teases an upcoming guest, Chuck Mitchell, owner of Dove Glove in Vermont. He rents doves out for all types of events.
Interview not included.
And Norm is blessed with my presence. Episode 97, Butter Than Nothing, melts into your ears now.
About that, I really called to give you an epitaph.
Okay, for you or for me?
May I do this?
By all means.
We lived at the shore area for a number of years, and my husband was a football coach down there.
Now, by the shore area, no, you mean?
Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, okay.
We used to live there.
Okay.
Well, there was a great big restaurant there called Zabrer's where I played with a band for about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And the owner of this restaurant, his name was Francis Zaber, Zaberer. And his advertisement in the newspapers said Zaber's. Then it had dot, 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 minutes away, which it was just on the outskirts of Atlantic City, so you had to drive about 12 miles to get there. So his scheme was minutes away. So when he passed away, what do you think appeared on his tombstone?
Was it that?
Minutes away.
Minutes away. That's
what do you
funny.
Think of that?
I think that's pretty good.
It's sort of strange, though, isn't it?
It is.
It's really, if I can get the first few lines, then I'll be on my way with it.
Okay.
I'm returning all the presents that you gave me. When my folks see, this is a letter to my boyfriend, by the way.
Okay.
When my folks see all those gifts, what will they think? When I walk into the house with just a child and not a spouse, they're going to wonder where I got that lovely mink. A waste of money was the wardrobe that you gave me. All you ever let me wear was some taboo. So I'm returning all the presents but the baby, because that's the only thing I didn't get from you.
Hey, Norma, you know something?
And they're all smitten.
Okay, well, yeah, smitten. what you do is like God smote.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. Right. But smitten is a little, of course, it's a word taken from that, but it would be a little bit more. It's kind of like some of the biblical words are kind of funny, like beget. I begat you and you begat him, and you know, people giving birth, they don't give birth, they beget.
We're all begotten.
That's right.
That's where woe begotten came from, I think.
I'm sorry, there's what?
Woe begotten. There's more, you hear more the word woe begotten than you hear begotten.
Well, woe be gone, yeah,
gone.
Maybe.
Woe be gone,
woe be
begotten.
Gone. Yeah, whatever, anyway, yeah. Yeah.
That's not fun. I don't think I want any smiting. But I just wanted to talk about a couple of things until I got back to the phone. I had learned your relative Hillary called, and she was talking about how Arabic looks like scribbles. Actually, it's very interesting. The Arabic writing looks a lot like the Hebrew script writing, not the printed words. And in Hebrew, the vowels, everything is a consonant, and the vowels are placed underneath the consonants.
Right, yeah.
But in Arabic, they're on top.
Oh.
And there is a great deal of similarity. My daughter learned some Arabic when she was in Israel. When she was 14, she was there. And then later on, when I lived in Carlisle, I used to have students living at my house. And there was one time when we had an Egyptian student who was just visiting. He was on the way through, so he was only here for about 6 weeks. And he stayed at the house, and we compared, you know, we wrote out our alphabets for each one, and we were really struck by the similarities in each language.
Mm.
And the same thing, a lot of the names, the biblical names, were very close in Hebrew and Arabic.
Yeah, well, I would think so. After all, I mean, Arabs are Semitic people, same as Jews are also, and they live in the same part of the world.
Well, the Middle East, yes.
I would think that the Hebrew and Arabic had to have a lot of common.
I think they're closer. Oh, I know they're closer to each other than they are to English.
I know you would know that where they fight and the antagonism. I can hardly wait to get home so I can look up stuff
about
myself. Because I know I've got I got stuff at home by a book by Dorothy Parker.
That's great. I'm going to have to get that. If that's out in video, Mrs. Parker?
Yes, I understand.
What was it, Mrs. Parker and her friends?
Yes, that is a video.
Oh, okay, somebody's going to open a restaurant, I'll bet you, any minute, named Mrs. Parker, et cetera. Because they seem to name restaurants after the Duchess of Windsor and different people like that.
Is there a restaurant named after the Duchess of Windsor?
Yeah, there is one in Washington, D.C. It's called Mrs. Simpson's.
Really?
Uh-huh. And there's another one in my old town, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, called Miss Garbo's.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean,
do they have to get, what if they have to get permission from the estates of these companies?
I don't know.
And they say Mrs. Simpson's. It could be O.J. Simpson. It could be the Simpsons, the cartoon.
Which Mrs. O.J.?
Yeah, the comic strip characters, you know, the animated cartoons.
Yeah, but there's another one called in Philadelphia that's very, very good, where my three sisters and I meet from time to time. When we don't go to Atlantic City and gamble, we meet in Philadelphia for lunch, and there's a place we like to go called Rembrandt's.
Okay.
So there's no mistaking. It's not Mrs. It's just plain
Rembrandt's. No, I guess that's pretty much in the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can say that. I may open a restaurant called Picasso.
Why not?
And all the waitresses and waiters and waitresses will have only one eye and the nose right
and
in the back
the
of their head.
Hanging
that's
up
right.
There.
And a nose in the back of their head.
I think I'll go to your restaurant.
Okay, Judy. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
Thank you, dear.
See ya.
Bye. Bye-bye. Okay, let's see. How about, hold on a minute. Yeah, we'll go to Joan in Tewksbury. Hey, Joan in Tewksbury.
Hi, Norm. Good show tonight.
Well, thank you very much. It's been kind of an off-the-wall kind of night.
Yeah, I guess so. The post office today came out with four different, stamps. Carousel horses.
I'm sorry, what's the theme?
Carousel horses, you know, flying horses, merry-go-round.
Oh, yes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? And these are four different, views of the carousel?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, very nice. Handsome pictures, wild-looking horses, you know, the way they always look.
I know. I love the way they look on the carousels.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? I've just gotten, in the past year or two, gotten to go to the post office and ask for those special edition things.
Oh, yeah.
The only problem is I buy too many of them, and it takes 97 years before I use them up. And meantime, there are so many of these other things that come out, including the ones you're talking about,
right,
the carousel, which
right.
I'd like to use, too.
Yeah, they come out with a lot of nice ones, and I think it's so much nicer to put a nice stamp on an envelope than just the regular flag is okay, but...
I think an awful lot more and more people, at least according to the mail that I get here and at home, that people do go look for the special editions, because when you get the regular stamp... It looks kind of lonely sitting there, and it's like
that's
nothing,
right.
No color there, and it's not at all interesting.
Right. Another thing, do you get the Boston Sunday Globe?
Yes, I do.
And did you see in the Northwest, do you get the Northwest section in it? You must.
Yeah, the North of Boston section, yes.
Well, July 9th, there was a big article on Talking Information Center.
Boy, I must have, I missed so much. I get so many papers, I miss things.
Well,
what was that about?
That's the Jack Hart does work there. That's for the blind.
Oh, yes.
The last paragraph read something like Jack Hart of Dorchester, who works for Metro Traffic Control. Evidently on Monday he reads his favorite papers and does a Tuesday morning show that he reads all these things.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. He's been doing that for some time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't that interesting? That's the July 9th?
That's the July 9th, yes.
9th Sunday paper.
Yes.
I'm sure I still have that.
Yes, I'm a little slow in reading these papers. Usually on Saturday, I have at least caught up to Saturday, but I haven't read last Sunday's Globe yet.
No, I haven't. I get about 5 papers a day.
Oh, boy.
And as a result, I just, including some of the local papers and things, but I start reading them when it comes up to landfill day.
Oh,
and at landfill we have
the recycling.
I can't think of words today.
Yeah.
We have the recycling program, but I just can't bring myself to bring the papers to the recycling place until I've actually at least glanced through
that's
them.
Right.
And
that's
so
right.
I spent hours for 2 or 3 days ahead of time, because the next one is Sunday. I won't make today.
No.
But the next one after that is Wednesday. So all day Monday and Tuesday I start going through all the papers.
That's right.
That's one. Anyway, I look up that Talking Info Center thing with the Jack Hart.
Very good article.
Okay, I will read that. I know that Jack has talked about that on the air.
Well, I had never heard that he did this Tuesday morning thing. Okay, you know the cattails that grow in the swampy area?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. During World War II, didn't they use them for something?
Boy, I have no idea.
I'll have to... Do some more
stuff. Somebody's saying, Hope is saying, stuffing for life jackets. Do you know that they did it for
maybe
that?
Maybe so.
Yeah? Does it sound like something they could have used for that?
Yeah, that would sound. When the brown spikes explode in the fall, that stuff must be... I know that... Milkweed, I think they used to use that stuff.
Yeah, that seems to me the kind of stuff that could be used for that.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? I never thought of that.
Yeah, well, there's a field down below me, and I'd love to go in and cut them, but they're so tall, and I know it's so deep. I'm sure it's not muddy out there, because everything has just dried up, so it's so horrible. But anyway.
I know that. I keep hoping that the rain that's promised, not promised, meteorologists can't promise weather, but they predict
they
it. I kind of hope it'll just absolutely soak, and I'd like to see it rain for about 3 days in a row and just soak right through.
Yeah.
Everything is dry, and I live out in the woods, so I worry about it. We've had forest fires in the past where it gets really scary.
Right. right.
Anyway, and brush fires that occupy local fire departments and all that, we really do need a soaking rain. We've had some anyway, and it, I think it's helped a little bit.
So there's 50 acres out, some of my land and some of another guy's land, and, you know, over the years, it's just grown up. And I remember one year that we had a fire that came, and the firemen just kind of let it go. But then it really got out of hand. And the only thing that stopped it from coming up into my buildings was the fact that I had plowed land out back, and it stopped. But I don't have any plowed land anymore.
So, oh, boy.
You know,
oh, boy. That's
that makes it kind of scary.
It is scary.
Yeah.
Yes, so it is.
My other thing is, and then I'll leave you, you were talking, I think, last night about postage of stamps in Canada. And
yes.
There
yes.
Again, as of July 9th, a half-ounce letter is 46 cents to send from here to Canada, and then an ounce is 52 cents.
Okay. Now, what does it take? Do you know what the cost of a letter in Canada is, just to mail within Canada?
No.
Because that's more than the 32 cents that it cost us here.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
I think their postal rates are higher than there are here. But we
to send out of the country anyway, like to Europe. It used to be 50 cents for a half ounce. And now it's 60 cents.
Hmm.
And then I think for an ounce is a dollar or something like that.
And we had Jimmy Tingle on about a week or so ago, the comedian, humorist and stuff. And one of his routines when he was on the Johnny Carson show, and we were talking about this the other night when he was on, was the fact that, you know, people complain about the U.S. Postal Service.
Right.
Well, boy, look, they're going to raise it 3 more cents, and people start to complain. And it really is an incredibly wonderful bargain. Now it's 32 cents.
Right.
As he pointed out, you put it out in a box. The people come, they pick up the stuff from the box, they bring it, hand-deliver it to any, not hand-delivered, but deliver it to a box or someplace, right at the home of anybody you want, anywhere in the whole country, for 32 cents. He said it would cost you that to get a kid to come in to lick the stamp, and it would charge you more than that.
Yeah.
I think postal rates are really great.
Yeah.
And people who talk about, you know, well, I sent a letter to the president. I just got it back from Calvin Coolidge. And, like, you know, it's
well,
craziness.
You know, there are times that you, like, sometimes if I send a letter in Tewksbury, it might take a week. But I could send a letter to Boston and it'd just be overnight. But I just think that... you know, sometimes it just gets lost or something.
I guess...
I don't blame them for...
I guess, so what do you think of the amount?
And, you know, now they have these machines anyway, and these machines make mistakes more so than the people ever did.
I'd like to think that.
They do.
Good, I'm glad. Hey, Joan, always a pleasure to talk with you and hear
nice
from you.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Thanks a million.
Take care of yourself.
You too, Joan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Hello. How lovely it is to be with you. And I kind of choke up when I think of that. Anyway, I am Norm Nathan, and I'll be around throughout the night till 5 o'clock in the morning. Does that feel good when I say that to you? Does that provide some kind of comfort or anything? Or, well, never mind. Anyway, let me do a few things, then we'll talk with the butter lady, Norma Duffy Lyon. Norma Duffy Lyon, you're probably saying, what do you mean by the butter lady? She sculptures things in butter. Some of her masterpieces include a full-size Clydesdale horse, a full-scale Clydesdale horse. You know how big a Clydesdale is? Let me show you. Like this big, that big. Wow. A Brahmin bull, and she's also done in butter. She's also done in butter sculpturing. Country singer Garth Brooks, she's the guy with the black hat. He's gone against all kinds of traditions because good guys are supposed to have worn white hats, and the evil ones were black hats. Anyway, but she's done all of that, and she's currently churning out a recreation of American Gothic for the Iowa State Fair. You know, the American Gothic with the stern-looking couple there and standing with a pitchfork outside a barn. I think in real life they were brother and sister. I always thought they were. It was his wife, but anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. An item on the AP wire that said, "You know American Gothic, Grant Wood's famous painting of a stoic farmer standing next to a tight-lipped woman? Well, just imagine it in butter." Norma Duffy Lyon, better known as the Butter Lady, is at it again, and she plans to recreate the most famous work of Iowa's most famous artist to celebrate the state's 150th birthday. And we thought it'd be kind of fun to talk with her. And so she's on the line with us right this very moment from Des Moines, Iowa. May I call you Norma?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay.
And if I'm Norma, you're Norman.
That's right. That's right. I'm glad to talk to you, Norma.
Well, I'm glad to hear from you.
You are the Butter Lady. Oh, not is that what they call you, the Butter Lady?
Oh, pretty much. It stuck with me.
Now, how do you do this stuff in butter and make it last? Do you then freeze it after you do the sculptures?
It's made in a refrigerated case with window display windows, and it's kept at 42 degrees. And I do soften the butter out in the August heat. That is, if I'm working in August, but it's easier to handle, and then it sets up in about 20 minutes in the cold area, and it can't be moved. It's got to be made right where it's going to be exhibited, and I always make a cow. The Dairy Association has me do a cow out of her own product, and then I make these other things that people suggest, and...
But did you make them in a refrigerated room? Is
yes.
that where you carved them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and but it's kind of not melted, but softened enough so you can work uh-huh. with it. Before that?
Yes, I wish I had a preconditioning room where it could be 65 degrees because it's perfect to work with right then. And the strange thing is that it's one of the easier things to sculpt with. I do the modeling process or add-on. I have done carving, that I prefer to do the add-on, because you don't like something, you change it, you know. And it's a really nice medium to work in, you know, if you've got the 65-degree butter in a 42-degree place to work.
Now, are you the only person in the entire world who sculptures in butter? Are there other people who do that?
Yes, there are. You have one in New York and Eastern Canada, and there's a lady that does the Dairy Princesses of Minnesota. She carves hers. She gets big blocks and is a carving process, and she does a princess each day. And I do work during the first part of the fairs, sometimes all of it, but the whole fair, but most of the time I'm done with some things before fair even begins.
Yeah, you said she carves it. Now that's different than what you do?
I the only carving I do is nostrils and eyes and nose prints, and I also use a tool to make the strands of butter that I put on the switch of the tail, which is one of my own innovations. I guess one day I thought, well, hey, I'll put wrinkles in the neck, because when a cow has her head raised, she's got a lot of wrinkles in her neck.
Yeah.
And I got this strand of butter, and it's butter that had been frozen before in storage. And I said, what am I going to do with this? I can't throw this away. And so I made a blob on the tail and then stuck it to it, and now I've got hairy tails.
That's kind of fascinating. Now, this is pure butter now. You just use butter.
Yes. I sculpted in tallow and lard. Lard's very difficult to work with. It acts a little bit like margarine. It wants to stick to you instead of what you're trying to make. And one time somebody did try to sneak margarine on me, and I had a fit. I said, if I ever see this again, you'll go somewhere else.
Okay, you can't sculpt in the margarine.
No.
It doesn't work as well as butter.
Oh, it doesn't set up hard very much, you know, like butter. Tallow, it has to be working in freezing conditions, 32 or below, to make it hold. And tallow is a little more like butter, but kind of hard to find. And
you did a Clydesdale horse.
Yes.
Now, a Clydesdale horse, what, weighs over 2,000 pounds?
Yes, and the last one that I made was at the Kansas State Fair a couple of years ago, and it took a ton of butter to do it.
Well, more than a ton if we're talking a horse.
If you include the weight of the armature, yeah.
I mean, because you're talking about a horse that weighs like over 2,000 pounds.
Well, close to it if they're in show shape.
Yeah, and so you need to that much in butter.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
How do you get a big block of butter like that?
You don't. It's an add-on process that I start with soft butter and add on until it's shaped like I want it, and then in the cold it sets up hard.
And what happens now? Now it's shaped up hard, and you can't move it to a warmer place, obviously, because the whole thing will melt and or certainly lose
yeah.
its shape and stuff. So people, you said people have to look at it where you sculpt.
Right where I'm working, which is usually a display case with windows.
I think that's incredible. How did you start all this? How do you get to be a butter sculptor?
Well, it's a fluke. I found out that I had the gift when I was in college in a snow sculpture contest at a winter carnival that the Iowa State was having. And it was one of the sculpturing teacher was one of the judges, and it was one of those light powdery snows instead of a big heavy wet one, and I figured out that if you pile it up, you could knock away what you don't want, and voila, it would hold. Of course, it was 20 below when I made it, except I was on the leeward side of the sorority house, and I was in, I'm a student, I graduated in pre-vet animal science. And so I made a horse pulling a sleigh. Well, I made the horse in the morning, and it was cold and sunny. We had a bright sunshine, and I usually get chilblains, and would you believe I did not? And I don't know why, because I was melting snow with my bare hands in places where I was trying to make it stick, like the head and the ears.
Yeah, maybe you were just so absorbed and so in, you know.
I'm sure.
With what you were doing. That everything else went out of your mind, including the chilblains.
Yes, and that's remarkable. Of course, I had taken a welding course and had
Wait a minute. You say that so casually.
Well,
of course, I took a welding course. How many people, of course, just happen to take a welding course?
Well, it was ag engineering, and I had to have some. And I'm really glad. I learned to weld and solder, and I used both the electric torch and the acetylene, and then we did some tin smithing and things like that, and learned to run a forge. And I guess when I was young, I used to make I designed horseshoes, and I even put some on.
Are you a farrier?
I was. Little. I didn't earn money at it. I put shoes on the horse I rode. She was sort of nasty-tempered, but...
Okay,
let me touch her.
That's kind of interesting because people. I think a lot of people who are listening, they're kind of city folk, Norma, and they think of blacksmiths as doing the horseshoeing.
Uh-huh.
When the farrier is the person who actually does the horseshoeing.
Yeah.
And most of the blacksmith works in iron and stuff, so that you can understand the error and all that. But you were a farrier?
No, I trained horses, and I designed shoes to correct problems they had, and and things like that, but I didn't really know how to run a forge until I got into college, and I had trained and ridden a lot of horses in high school, and yes, I wanted to be a veterinarian, and my dad was born and raised in Iowa, and I was a city girl, actually. My mother and my grandmother and my step-grandfather were all musicians that played in the symphony, and she tried to make a percussionist out of me, and I guess that's what I was. She founded and conducted the Knoxville, Tennessee Symphony Orchestra, and then when she got older, she retired from conducting and played first chair viola. And she taught violin downstairs, my mother taught piano upstairs, and I'd come home and do homework, and and then when I got my work done, I'd go ride horses.
What a fascinating family you had.
My dad was a journalist.
And he was a reporter, did he work for a newspaper?
Yes, he worked for the Des Moines Register when he was going to Drake University. Another interesting thing is his older brother is the man that wrote the book State Fair, which was on Broadway a little bit ago.
Oh, sure, sure.
And he was my Uncle Phil, and his name was Philip Duffield Stong, and my name was Norma Duffield Stong. And then I married a lion, and I met at Iowa State. And he's a dairy farmer, and we milk about 224 Jerseys, purebred Jerseys.
You do that right now?
Yeah.
So you have a dairy farm?
Uh-huh. I don't do a lot of chores. I get up in the night, though, if we've got fresh cows to check or one that's getting ready to freshen. And if they don't have to get up because there's no problems, why, they can sleep all night, and I get to sleep a little later in the morning.
You're a fascinating lady.
Because
I thought it was fascinating enough, the fact that you sculpt her out of butter, but you've got families who are involved in music and in veterinary work, and you have a dairy farm with Jersey cows. You have,
uh-huh.
What we have? And
they're getting real popular right now, too, because protein's a big thing, and they're the big protein producer.
Okay. And your father is a journalist, worked for one of the very big newspapers in the country.
Actually, he worked in Washington, D.C. for Metcalf, McGovern. I guess he even wrote some of the ag speeches for John Kennedy.
You're talking about a liberal out of Iowa.
You better believe.
Well, I'm a liberal, too. I think that's lovely. I'd love to hear you talk that way.
I got a hint of that when you opened the conversation talking about, right-wing, left-wing stuff.
Oh, because we have a guy who precedes me on these nights, and he refers to a liberal as leftist, and he says it like it's a dirty word.
Well, that's too bad.
No, it is too bad. It's inane. It's inane.
Where does social justice come from?
Well, you don't have to talk me into that. I'm on your side, and I also have. I don't have a farm, but I do have some animals, including a horse.
Really?
Yeah, but my horse probably weighs about 1,600 pounds. You could use a lot less butter if you did a sculpture of her than of a Clydesdale, which is one of these huge workhorses that are so beautiful.
Oh, yes. I love to watch them. I love to watch animals perform. I also made a quarter horse at Calgary and a cowboy for their stampede one year.
Does it bother you the fact that that this kind of sculpturing isn't forever?
No. They tried to keep theirs for 8 months, and they didn't have a strong enough compressor on it, and they were going to reclaim the butter and freeze it like I do at my other fairs. And because I do this like in Illinois, Kansas, and Iowa, and I've been to California and Arizona, and I even did one in Wisconsin once. And I did a bull for a bull stud in Minnesota for an open house of a new barn.
You also did the barn. Barth Brooks, the country singer.
I tell you, there was so much hype before it, I felt pressure I never thought I could endure.
Like what, for example?
Well, to make him look really good. And I was very disappointed in my finished product. I thought his neck, he had hardly any neck, and his head was a little too big.
I'm sorry.
An A-plus on the guitar.
Okay, well, now you're talking about him in reality, that's the way he's built funny?
Oh, no, he's not. I just didn't get it like him. I was a bit disappointed. I gave myself a C. I gave myself an A+ on the guitar.
Okay, that's great. Now you're going to do the American Gothic for the 150th birthday of the state of Iowa.
That's right. I even made a costume to work in.
That's got to be one of the most famous paintings of all the American Gothic. I mentioned that was his sister, not his wife.
It was his sister. The man was his dentist.
I'm sorry, the man was who?
I think the man was a dentist that he knew.
Oh, really?
And the house in the background still exists. In fact, it's been kind of kept up in a little bitty town called Eldon, Iowa. The one with the Gothic window in it.
Yeah.
And I drove by there one day and saw it. It's very bare. The yard was kept up, but there was not very many trees or anything around. Like his sketch of it. When he had done a sketch of it, it was run down and had a little tree in front of it. And that's not there now. And the house was all painted and trimmed and everything.
It's funny to think of him as a dentist because he looks so stern.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if he said rinse, please, I wouldn't dare argue with him.
No, you wouldn't. Not with that pitchfork. Everybody says, well, I suppose you'll just buy a pitchfork and cover it. And I says, nothing doing. It'd be too big. So I've already had it made. I mean, the armature for it.
No, I
use number 9 wire for the tongs and 3/8 round stock metal for the whatever shows for the handle. His knuckles are right in the center at the bottom. He's wearing bib overalls under his coat. I don't have it in front of me now. I thought they had glasses on, or one of them did, but maybe not. And somebody says, how have you studied the picture? And I says, well, there's lace curtains in the window, and there's a rickrack on her apron with a design that's kind of popular now, calico, black calico with dots on it. And she's got a little hank of hair hanging down the back of her neck. You can see a church steeple in the background, and the whole lightning rod on the peak of the house. You don't see the top of it. You just see the glass ball part of it, no more. And just, you know, I picked up all this little silly stuff, and I went all the way to Davenport, Iowa, to the Museum of Art there to see it. It was borrowed for an exhibit, and a lot of his other things are there now. And the main reason I went was to see what the frame was like. And I didn't get to see it, but she showed me another one just like it. And so I think I'm going to put a frame in around the front of it. Where people go by and see it.
What happens to all the butter that you've used when it comes to the end of time for these sculptures?
Well, as soon as the fair is over, here in Iowa is the only place I do my own tearing down. The other places, they do it for me because I'm usually thousands of miles away. But we pack it. I use cast metal scoops. I've got 2 feed scoops and a trowel that are all in one piece, and they don't bend under the pressure. And chop it off the armature, the framework, and pack it in these big 6-gallon pails with lids, and I can get about 30 pounds in each bucket. I'm not supposed to lift more than that, but then you know what you do. You put 30 pounds in one hand, you have to balance yourself with 30 pounds in the other hand, and then I'm carrying 60, and my doctor shakes his head, don't complain to me about your back.
Now, what do you do with this butter afterwards?
We take it to a cold storage place, and they freeze it, and then we set it out a few days before I start work at the different fairs I go to. But everybody has their own frame and their own cache of butter, and then I don't have to be moving that back and forth.
Okay, so you can use the same butter for more than one work then?
Yes, uh-huh,
okay.
That's right.
When is the 150th birthday celebration of Iowa?
It's all this year. It started in late December last year, and in fact, I carved a cheese in the shape of Iowa for it, for the party. as an appetizer on the food table, and that was my kickoff. And I have one more show to do in Iowa that's also celebrating it. It's called National Cattle Congress in Waterloo, and I'll be doing two Indian boys and a white boy, and they're showing him how to shoot a bow and arrow with a little hollowed-out stone that they roll on the ground, and the idea is to shoot the arrow through the hole in the middle while it's rolling. That's how they learn to shoot moving animals and things. And my great-grandfather, Duffield, played in the woods in southeastern Iowa with the Indian kids. They'd go and meet them in the woods, and I imagine they hunted and fished and played games, and they learned things from each other. I can't remember. I guess Keosauqua was an Indian chief back in those times, and Blackhawk even. I can't think of all of them, but my dad and Uncle Phil were born in Keosauqua, and of course I'm talking about their grandfather that went and learned how to shoot bow and arrow. And this, my great-great-grandmother was the first woman to cross the Mississippi into Iowa and stay there.
Oh, cross from, we're from Illinois?
No, they crossed through Illinois, but they had left in a covered wagon from Steubenville, Ohio.
Oh, I see. Do you write also? Do you write?
No, Dad and Phil were gifted with that. My husband could write if he wanted to, but he...
No, because your story is absolutely fascinating. I call because we saw this little funny story about a lady in Iowa who carves things, or sculptures things in butter, and we thought, hey, that'd be kind of a funny thing. But you turn out to be a whole lot more interesting than I even imagined you would be.
Well, thank you. It's been a pretty exciting day because I had to judge some of the, a little bit of judging at the County 4-H Fair up north of here. And I entered some artwork, and I entered six pieces, and I got five blues and one red.
Oh, beautiful.
And I was just thrilled at that. But the funny thing is, I don't know whether the judge likes horses or what, but every year that I've entered, I would do a horse in watercolor. And every year, it's the horse that wins.
Isn't
and
that wonderful. That's
I did my little grandson in oil. And I thought it was really, in my mind, a second a red ribbon, not a blue ribbon, and in quality. And I even thought that about the horse that won the class.
It's funny because one of my favorite remembrances is I won a blue ribbon for my corn at the Topsfield, Massachusetts Fair, the state. That's about the oldest continually operational fair, I think, in the country.
Well,
and it helps. It's held in September each year.
Uh-huh.
And I entered corn one year, and I won the blue ribbon. I was so excited about that. And my kids belong to the 4-H. Used to. They're older now, but they belong to 4-H Rabbit Club.
Oh yeah.
So a lot of what you're saying is. So I think I'll move to Iowa.
Well, come right ahead. We'd love to have you.
Okay. Hey, you're a lovely lady, Norma.
Oh, thank you.
And you have a lovely. That was my wife's name also. So
really?
Her name was Norma, and mine is Norm.
Uh-huh.
Norman. And so that was kind of. You kind of got mixed up when people called. You didn't know who they wanted to talk to. but you sound absolutely fascinating. I love talking with you.
Well, I love talking with you.
Thank you.
I was out east last fall making a cow at Montgomery County, Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Did you come to New England at all, Massachusetts?
Not anymore. I did too much last year, and I got run down and caught the first bad infection that came along and landed in the hospital for a week. So my husband looked at me real sternly. Four shows.
And I know that you mentioned that your back, it causes problems from time to time.
Yes, it does.
Oh.
It's been different reasons, but the last 2 years, and I managed to stay away from a chiropractor. I take a lot of Tylenol, believe me, but it's a sciatic nerve now, and it goes right down my leg. And I remember last year in Kansas, it was midnight before I got done with my work before I could put color on it, because they use color now, and when it calls for it. And my right leg was looked like a fence post. It looked like a fence post that night when I took my jeans off. And I used to be pretty proud of my legs.
Well, I hope your legs revert to their glorious shape of yesteryear, and that your back is healed too, and
oh,
all
thank
that. But you're an interesting lady, and again, I thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
Happy 150th anniversary to the state of Iowa.
Well, thank you very much. I'll relay that.
Okay, take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye now. Norma Duffy Lyon. What an interesting lady. Connected with the symphony orchestra. Her father, a reporter for the Des Moines Register, which is a major newspaper across the country. Of course, especially during the caucuses. That's one of the really important ones there. And all this wild stuff she's done. I never did ask her, how come she doesn't, has she thought about sculpting in something more solid than butter? But we never got to that. I was so interested in so many of the other things. Okay, next we'll be talking with Chuck Mitchell. He's the owner of Dove Love. He's in Vermont.
A little closer to home up here, up in Vermont.
Rents doves out for all types of events. And his story is really very is fascinating as well.
Beat it, beat.
Tony Nesbitt is our producer. Oh, God must have looked upon me and smiled, and he said, "Son, Norman." In fact, God said, "Norman." He keep pronouncing the same way my father did. "Norman, I'm going to bless you with Tony Nesbitt. He will be your producer, and he'll be..." Oh, stop that. Okay.
What a way to close out July. Now, don't spread yourselves too thin this coming week as the dog days of August begin. Next time, we'll cool you off with a 30-year-old dumb birthday game. Until then, closing the vault and leaving this world a little sillier than we found it. For Judy in Pennsylvania, Zabber's Restaurant near Atlantic City, Mrs. Simpson's in Washington, D.C., Miss Garbo's in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and Rembrandt's in Philly. Norm's 5-star Zagat's Best Pick restaurant winner, Picasso's, where the waitstaff only have one eye and a nose on the back of their head. Joan in Tewksbury, Flying Hosses, Commemorative Stamps, the Talking Information Centers for the Blind, Dump Day, Cattails, Jimmy Tingle, Norma Duffy Lyon, the Butter Lady, Clydesdale's, the Iowa State Fair, the Des Moines Register, the Knoxville, Tennessee Symphony Orchestra, Philip Duffield Stong, Horses and Horseshoes, the Calgary Stampede, Garth Brooks, American Gothic, 4-H Clubs, Chuck Mitchell, and Dove Glove, the Topsfield Fair, and the man with blue ribbon corn, Norm Nathan. I'm the heaven-sent Tony Nesbitt.